Good afternoon. It's Monday, the 11th of February, 2019, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. Your host today, Mike Robinson, myself, Brian Gerrish. Well, the image.
The image, yes. What is it?
Well, of course, it's the Minister for War. It's Gavin Williamson. I thought this was a very striking photograph of this immensely, dangerous young man, as we're about to hear. And his minders, and I just wondered who he was frightened about. Do you think he thought he was going to be dragged from his car by yellow vests or people who'd suffered overseas, or the Chinese or the Russians? Maybe
not clear.
No. Well, there we are. The Minister of War and his minders. And what was this article all about? Well, it was a complete, I'm going to say, load of rubbish in the Mail that said he was going to cost the taxpayers £300 million because he felt he should be able to park his official car on the MOD car park up in Whitehall. But this had been designated for use by the construction industry rebuilding Parliament. And that was, as I say, going to cost us £300 million. So this was a completely fake story. And we got a clue because here in this inset piece of text, we had this amazing statement: how nuclear bunker known as Pindar is connected to Downing Street by a wire. Britain's future would be decided in the event of a catastrophe or conflict. Now, that is definitely a typo, or else it's some other strange meaning. But we know what typos mean. They mean, of course, fake news.
The Daily Mail would never put out any fake news, Brian.
I'm afraid they would, actually. So there we are. Minister of War and minders to fake news in one go.
Well, that image that the Daily Mail published, of course, was him heading off towards RUSI, the Royal United Services Institute, where he was giving a speech this morning. And it was a mighty rousing speech as well. So let's listen to his first few words.
It's important to start off by asking the question of why do we fight? Why do we invest in defence? It is fundamentally to protect our people, protect our interests, and of course to defend Britain.
So I don't know if you've managed to keep your lunch down of having heard that. We're going to hear more, so that you get more opportunity, unfortunately, in a minute. But what he said there was very interesting, Brian, because he said it's about protecting our people, protecting our interests, and, of course, by the way, looking after or defending Britain.
Defense, yeah.
So Britain is mentioned as an afterthought, and the question always comes to my mind, who is us? Who are our people? What are our interests? Because he clearly wasn't talking about Britain, otherwise he wouldn't have needed to specify that as sort of an afterthought at the end.
Yeah, well, this is becoming more and more clear, Mike, because the plan, as you're about to take us through, is beginning to take defence away from protecting the nation state, and it's more into the corporate interest field. So let's have a look at it.
Well, indeed. So let's see, what was he talking about? Well, he said that Russia is resurgent, rebuilding its military arsenal to bring the independent countries of the former Soviet Union, like Georgia and Ukraine, back into its orbit. He was also having a complaint about China. And he said that, he was going to be transforming UK defence to meet what he described as the global threats of tomorrow. So what was he talking about? He was discussing what threats are we likely to face, how should our armed forces be structured to confront them, what are the capabilities we need to tackle the dangers that lie ahead. As you say, Russia, China, the big problems. He warned that Britain has to stand up to those who flout international law. And of course, he wasn't really talking about international law. He was talking about the rules-based international order. So let's have another little listen to what he had to say.
That future, of course, is uncertain. But I expect to see the army using both manned and unmanned teams, artificial intelligence and the unmatched quality of our personnel to win not just conventional wars, but also dominate the conflict in the grey zone. I expect the Royal Navy to deploy flexibly, to be capable of being in many places at once and to ensure we have an efficient fleet of war-fighting ships, looking at how they can grow both their mass and their lethality. And I expect the Royal Air Force to operate the next generation with modern air command and control, more combat squadrons and energy weapons to keep our skies safe.
Sorry, so we have discussed on a number of occasions, Brian, that clearly the West is feeling like it needs to try to catch up with what Russia has been doing. So he's talking about future technologies, he's talking about AI, he's talking about energy weapons. He doesn't really have the capability to deploy those at any point in the very near future. But yep. Of course, that's what this transformation fund is all about, to try and develop those. And he made a very interesting comment during the question and answer session at the end, because he made the point that really government wasn't in a position to necessarily have to develop these technologies themselves. So they're going to have to work a lot closer with the private sector. And he mentioned Google, for example. So, you know, it very much sounded like they are seriously considering moving or implementing AI based on what Google produces. Is this something that would have been considered fit for purpose if the equivalent technology had been available, you know, 30, 40 years ago? I don't think we would have been looking to get involved with a company like Google in the defence realm.
You could argue, Mike, that the defence industry and what they put forward, what they're trying to sell to governments, governments have always looked at. But now we're dealing with beasts of immense power, more money than the average small country. And it's quite clear that if you have a prime minister in bed with a big organisation like Google, take David Cameron, for example, and his relationship through with the president of Google Europe, I think the lady was, then what are we dealing with? Are we dealing with our proper government or are we dealing with big business? But can I just drop in there? It's the delivery of this speech is like something out of a children's school play where he's been given his lines and he's doing his very best to put on a stern demeanour and deliver it. There's no substance behind this guy. He's very dangerous, in my opinion. It's like he's there with his toy soldiers on the floor playing battles, and he thinks it's reality.
He mentioned the grey zone. I'm not entirely certain what the grey zone is exactly.
Neither am I. No. At this point, Mike, we'll have a look at that.
Well, indeed. So AI and so on, what else was he talking about? We'll develop swarm squadrons of network-enabled drones capable of confusing and overwhelming enemy air defences. Yes. And we're making very significant investment on the £1.9 billion we spend on cyber capabilities. So that's all fantastic stuff. We're going to be building swarms of drones, developing our cyber capabilities and so on. But we'll keep the best for last. Have a listen to this.
As a nation, we've never shied away from acting, even if that has meant standing alone, as we did in the darkest hours of the Second World War. Even after the Berlin Wall fell 30 years ago, when there was no overwhelmingly obvious threat to our security, we recognised that the United Kingdom had a role and responsibility to stand up for our values across the globe. Defending our values took us to Kuwait, Bosnia, Sierra Leone and Kosovo. And it made a difference to millions of people's lives.
Well, Brian, it really did make a difference to millions of people's lives. And as RT is reporting today, we are like the living dead, citizens of Mosul in despair 1.5 years after the liberation from ISIS. And what RT is reporting here is chaos and misery. That's what life in Mosul is like more than 1.5 years after Iraqi forces and the US-led coalition, including the UK, staged one of the deadliest battles in decades to liberate the city from Islamic State. What was once Iraq's second largest city and home to millions was reduced to ash in July 2017, When the US-led coalition dropped bombs and recaptured it from IS, more than 10,000 civilians are estimated to have been killed in the battle. Thousands of dead bodies are still buried under the rubble amid the lack of recovery crews and equipment. Locals say fraud and corruption are halting the process. So he mentioned Kuwait, which of course is what kicked off everything that's happened in Iraq since. So I'm afraid Britain has to, I think, hold some responsibility for the situation in Mosul today. We have systematically criticised the Russians and the Syrian government for what they did in Aleppo, in other parts of Syria. But the fact of the matter is that the Russians have not left thousands of bodies lying under the rubble in those cities that have been liberated from terrorists, which we backed. And so I find that statement from Gavin Williamson there, well, pretty despicable.
Yeah, well, it goes on, and we're going to continue to run through this because we think it's so important that people should understand what's really now happening in the Ministry for War. So let's move on to this one. We're ready to strike back against Russia and China. Defence Secretary to announce Britain's flagship aircraft carrier will be deployed to the Pacific. So here we are. Here's the mighty ship, one of two. In due course. But the key question is this: where are the aircraft? Now, we've been reporting about the slow trickle of F-35s coming into UK, some of them now embarked on the Queen Elizabeth aircraft carrier. But apparently this is now to be used to warn off, frighten off the Chinese and the Russians. But it gets deeper because the reality is we cannot operate. We cannot even operate a single aircraft carrier. Why do I say this? Because the reality is that the Queen Elizabeth is having to use the US Marine Corps aircraft in order to form even a small air wing on board. So this was taken from defencejournal.org.uk. It was a very good article written quite a while ago, but it's still relevant. The addition of US Marine Corps aircraft, or CHMS Queen Elizabeth, sail with around 24 or so F-35Bs, in addition to around 14 or so helicopters for a maiden deployment. It's understood that the US aircraft will augment British jets on coalition operations. If those American aircraft weren't on board, then the world would be seeing at the moment that this is simply not credible. You have this giant aircraft carrier. It's not a super carrier, as claims. It's simply not on a scale compared with the American carriers. It's big, nevertheless, but if it hasn't got aircraft, what's it going to do? So let's see what Gavin was having to say. Mike's given part of it here. We have to be ready to show the high price of aggressive behaviour, to talk but fail to act, risk our nation state being seen a little more than a paper tiger against adversaries upping their spending and advancing technology. We have to respond. If we do not, we'll find ourselves with fewer options when we face threats in future. The alliance must also develop its ability to handle the kind of provocations, got there in the end, that Russia is throwing at us. Such action from Russia must come at a cost. So this is threat after threat after threat. And he goes on to say that leaving the European Union gives Britain an unparalleled opportunity to consider how to maximise its influence. Brexit has brought us to a great moment in our history, a moment when we must strengthen our global presence, enhance our lethality and increase our mass. We shouldn't shy about our ambition for our forces. So this is the boy with his toys. But of course, you're talking about real men and women and their lives and the equipment. But the reality is that the British government's simply not telling the truth. So you can find the information. This was a comment by Jerry Kidd that I found online. Now, he was a captain of Queen Elizabeth. He's still the captain, but he's up in rank to a commodore. He was quoted as saying this: we're constrained by the F-35 buy rate, even though that was accelerated in SDR in 2015. So initial operating capability numbers in 2020 are going to be very modest indeed. We will flesh it out with helicopters, and a lot depends on how many US Marine Corps F-35s come on our first deployment in 2021. But by 2023, we're committed to 24 UK jets on board. And after that, it's too far away to say. So this is a vast ship. They haven't got the aircraft to make it worthwhile. We've got to depend on the Americans. And to be going on a deployment to threaten the Chinese, and you're saying, well, don't worry, we're going to supplement it with helicopters. This is akin to madness. It's time to increase our lethality and warn Russia and China there will be a high price for flouting international law. But that's why we're giving the North Sea gas and oil reserves to China. And in case people haven't seen this, it has been there in the mainstream press, but not pushed to any great extent. China has taken over Scotland's North Sea oil production. And here we've got the Telegraph: Chinese giant makes North Sea's biggest gas discovery in a decade. This is the article about CNOOC, the Chinese National Offshore Oil Corporation. So it's working with the French and the Italians now. So when they're taking oil, Gavin is perfectly happy that that's the case. But of course, the British public have to be told that those nasty Chinese are presumably working with the Russians to kill us all in our beds. And I'll just end by this one. Of course, we're seeing the Americans still pushing out the business that the Chinese are building airstrips on atolls out in the South China Sea. This is not good because, of course, it's not being done by the US and UK. So interesting stuff, Mike, isn't it? The hypocrisy. But we'll just leave people with this one from Sputnik. Like it or not, we've lost. Retired US general concedes Afghan defeat. So we've had another period of war and slaughter in Afghanistan on the basis of what these politicians say. What's the reality? That the Americans, with their massive military might and air power, still have had to concede another defeat, because every time the Americans pull back, what's happening is that the Afghani troops are being overwhelmed. So have a read of that. The Taliban are the victors, says retired US Brigadier General Don Bulduk, who saw 69 of his soldiers killed in Afghanistan. We just haven't figured that out yet. Mm. Pretty amazing stuff.
Okay, now, if you like what UK Column's doing, please consider joining us. You can join at ukcolumn.org/community, take out a membership, and that would be very much appreciated. And also available on the UK Column website at the moment, AV9.1 DVDs. So Brian's presentation, Alex Thompson, Patrick Henningsen, Dr. Graham Downing and Ian R. Crane, all giving presentations from late last year in London. It was a fantastic event. Get the DVDs if you can. Now, back to the UK. And well, Britain has decided to push through an offensive weapons bill. This is going to make it a lot harder for young people apparently to buy knives and acid online. With anybody selling those types of things requiring age verification to prove that people buying them are over 18. And it's also going to ban possession of weapons such as zombie knives, knuckle dusters, so-called Death Stars, both in public and in private. Those who have any of that sort of thing is going to be asked to hand them in. So, Brian, what are we seeing here? Another effort to sort of disarm the UK public. Now, I appreciate that there's been a lot of pretty heavy headlines over the last year or two in the Daily Mail and other newspapers about the rise in violent crime in London.
And stabbings as well.
Well, exactly. But of course, it's not the availability of knives that has caused the violent crime in London. It's a combination of economic reality and the fact that the police have been significantly supplied with resources, manpower and finances and so on. Well, in the meantime, Sajid Javid had this to say: it's totally wrong that young people are able to get their hands on dangerous weapons such as knives and harmful acids. I come back to the point, this is dealing with a symptom, it's not dealing with the underlying problem. And if you remove weapons such as knives and acid away from people, they'll find something else to do to kill each other. You're not dealing with the underlying problem. The underlying problem, of course, is breakdown in society. Yeah. Part of it, of course, as I say, is the underfunding of the police. So, for example, here's the Independent highlighting that police are hiring civilians on zero-hour contracts now to guard crime scenes. This is Norfolk Police, who got rid of all their police community support officers. And so they've got nobody to protect crime scenes. And they're going to encourage people that have past military experience or past policing experience to come and stand outside perhaps the Skripal's house or something similar to that, so similar type of scenario. And they're going to get paid £10 an hour for doing that. That's fantastic stuff on zero-hour contracts. In the meantime, police in London, I believe this is London, yes, switching off the non-emergency telephone lines overnight to reduce the demand on what the Mail here is describing as already overstretched forces. So basically, if you can't phone them, they don't have to come and deal with anything. I appreciate that this is the 101 number, which is supposedly the non-emergency line, but that doesn't really matter. This is a tantamount to closing local police stations, and you know, it just means that people have another opportunity to contact the police removed from them.
Yeah, and I'll just say that last couple of days, Cressida Dick was in the headlines, pointing out that she's a remarkable woman, not only due to her sexuality, and of course she is a common purpose future leader, but the fact that she's been able to get to the highest levels of the police means that other people should, and she's pressing very hard for 50% of the police to be women. And where have we got to at the moment? Well, the police seem to be concentrating on every policy apart from actually dealing with the crime. We know from serving officers at the moment that a vast number of crimes are simply not being investigated because essentially the police have been told, just forget those. So this is a very dangerous situation, Mike.
So did she get to be Met Commissioner on the basis of merit, or was it because she was a common purpose leader, or was it because she ran a botched counter-terrorism event which resulted in somebody being shot in the head multiple times, an innocent person?
The pattern we've seen elsewhere, we've had a lady called Lynn Homer who went from troubled elections in Birmingham through to working in the Treasury in the Department of Transport, I think it was. Every time something went wrong, she was elevated in position, and I think we can say we've seen the same with Cressida Dick. If your objective is to break down society in UK, then obviously you want to promote people who are very good at doing that. And if you think I'm being cynical or a little bit callous, then stay with us till the end of the news. But let's get to the NHS. And of course, the big lie at the moment by the Conservatives is that they are not privatising the NHS. Conservative MP Gary Streeter has said to me that he doesn't believe that this is happening. Most of the Conservative MPs don't believe it's happening. But I have a look at this Guardian article here. Robots and AI to give doctors more time with patients, says report. New NHS review calls for staff training with 90% of jobs soon to require digital skills. Now, everywhere we're seeing reports on the NHS, we're seeing breakdown of basic patient care. Patients left in corridors, patients unwashed, patients not supported. And we know a lot of this is due to overwork of the staff, but it's also due to that common purpose influence within NHS management. So where does this little article take us? Well, it's fascinating. This is the quote from Matt Hancock here. Technology must be there to enhance and support clinicians. It has the potential to make working lives easier for dedicated NHS staff and free them up to use their medical expertise and do what they do best, care for patients. Well, we're going to just amend that, and we'll cross out care for patients and we'll put make profit. Now, this is not a guess. Stay with us on the rest of this particular segment. So this is the man of interest. He's called Eric Topol, and he is the man that's been used to help push this report out. In his tweet, he says, "Today, here in London, a thrill to finally hold our new report for NHS England at Matt Hancock at DHSC.gov.uk. As far as I know, the first country to plan healthcare, AI, genomics, digital, and to 2040. So this is the document, preparing the healthcare workforce to deliver the digital future, an independent, it says it's independent, Mike, we're always encouraged when it says that, an independent report on behalf of the Secretary of State for Health and Social Care, February 2019. Now, what is this really about? Well, thanks to Eric himself, we get a clue in this next tweet. What's he got to say here? Last year, so he's retweeting the Department of Health. Last year, we commissioned Dr. Eric Topol to uncover ways the NHS could use technology to provide safer, more effective care for patients. And then underneath, we've got the graphic from the Department of Health and Social Care. We want the NHS to be the most cutting-edge health system in the world for the use of technology to improve health, make lives easier, and make money.
Ah.
So there we are. We're not into secrets anymore, Mike. We're going to use the UK and the NHS system as a test bed for robotics, AI, and massive profits. And they're not even attempting to hide it now. The objective is to make money. It's not to care for people.
Okay.
So I wasn't really aware of this man. So we did a little bit of work before the news to see what we could find on Mr. Eric Topol. I don't get good vibes from his Twitter page here. We've got the robotic hand holding the apple. I presume that's the sort of sideways reference to knowledge. Most of this is very me. So he's advertising his book, Deep Medicine, which is coming out shortly. We've got this one here, which is, just bring this up on the other screen. This is the NHS, discover the Topol review and the recommendations on preparing the NHS healthcare workforce to deliver the digital future. So, of course, he's very big at pushing himself forward on that one. And the one here is a tweet from Eric Topol himself, and it's saying, what's wrong in healthcare today is that it's missing care. And so what are we doing with this whole system, Mike? We're not focusing on care interactions between people in a caring, loving way. We're focusing on robotics, AI, making money. And of course, what's in the bottom of this is massive data collection. So stay with it, because you can get a little bit more on the internet. Wikipedia here, but very useful. We're going to go down to the bottom line where it says in 2016, Topol was awarded a $207 million grant from the National Institute of Health to lead a significant part of the Precision Medicine Initiative, a 1 million American prospective research program. So what can we find out about these? Well, there were little embedded links, and the National Institute of Health is the primary agency of the United States government responsible for biomedical and public health research. It was founded in the late 1870s, now part of the United States Department of Health and Human Services. So US government absolutely in bed with profit from health. And that's now being brought across to UK via the back door. And the other one there, the Precision Medicine Initiative, is this one. All of Us is a research project created in 2015 during the tenure of Barack Obama with $215 million in funding that aims to make advances in tailoring medical care to the individual. And here's the sting. The project aims to collect genetic and health data from 1 million subjects.
None of that will be shared with insurance companies, of course.
Of course not, Mike. Of course not. We're going to say, if you haven't seen the excellent conference videos from UK column Dying for Good Health Conference, this is the address. I'll read it out quickly. www.ukcolumn.org/community/events/dying for good health/. Dying for good health has got a hyphen between each of the words. So if you haven't seen those talks, recommend you do. And of course, the theme is that the government utterly lying at the moment as the NHS is privatised. Well, let's bring in a bit of black humour, fairly heavy news today. I think the BBC, Mike, has just sunk to the bottom level by this Dr. Victoria Bateman, who seems to get a kick out of taking her clothes off and delivering lectures. My headline is BBC sinks to a new low promoting cellulite above Brexit. If anybody wants to actually look at this lady in the flesh, it's up to you. But what a situation we're in with these very dangerous decisions being made affecting our constitution, and all the BBC can do is try to promote some flesh.
Let's head over to the continent. And well, the euro is 20 years old, obviously. I'm sure you realised that at the beginning of this year. Today, the Eurogroup is going to meet. This is a regular meeting. 20 years, say, since the introduction of the euro. And they're going to do a couple of things. Well, apparently public support for the euro has never been higher, so that's pretty exciting stuff. 74% of Europeans are really in favour of it. So this is good stuff. So look, they're going to do a couple of things. First of all, they're electing a new executive board member for the European Central Bank, but they're also deepening EMU. So this is a way forward on the budgetary instrument for convergence and competitiveness. I'm sure everybody understands what that means. And they're saying that following the mandate received by EU leaders at the 14th December Euro Summit, the Eurogroup is in inclusive format will continue to discuss the deepening of economic and monetary union. They're going to hold a first exchange of views on the way forward regarding budgetary instruments for convergence and competitiveness for the euro area and ERM2 members states on a voluntary basis. So there you go. I'm sure that's clear what that means. Yes.
No, I have to stay silent.
Well, indeed,
I have to say silent.
Indeed. Well, look. So they're busy. They're busy. It's a bit like, you know. It's in many ways. It's a bit like Gavin and his defence, because the reality doesn't meet the rhetoric, yeah. Right? So they're busy talking about how they're pulling everything together, integrating more with economically and with monetarily and so on. But in the meantime, there are some glimpses of reality. So here's Jacques up here now. It's fair to say he is a French economist. And he's pretty anti-Europe and anti-globalism and so on. Nonetheless, he makes some good points. So he's talking about the decomposition of Europe. Europe is falling apart. Basically, four recent issues that he says are indicative of this. The first is, as we mentioned on the news last week, Donald Tusk's comments about the special place in hell for anybody promoting Brexit without a plan for carrying it out statement safely. Then secondly, he's pointing out the statement by the head of Les Républicains Party in France, saying in a tweet that the EU should make Brexit painful or as painful as possible for the British. Third, that the fact that the French have recalled their ambassador from Rome because the French and the Italians are falling out in a pretty spectacular way at the moment. And fourth, France's concession to oppose Nord Stream 2. And of course, this theoretically was breaking their agreement with Germany. And he says, voila. What makes even more laughable Emmanuel Macron's earlier pretense to embody a renewed European Union. Well, of course, that fourth point about Nord Stream 2, this was coming from the events last Thursday where, well, basically the European Commission was trying to deal with US concerns about Europe's dependence on Russian gas supplies by putting in amendments to the gas market directive, which apply to pipelines coming into the EU from outside the EU. So on Thursday, France's foreign minister said that it would back, that France would back the EU's proposed amendments. But as this Bloomberg report here is saying, on Friday, they came up with a compromise with the Germans, basically saying that that it would be the EU country that a pipeline enters that would have the power to decide on whether the amended rules would apply. And so that sorts Germany out, because that's, you know, Nord Stream 2 will come into Germany. So perhaps point four here isn't quite so relevant anymore. But nonetheless, there is a general and increasing recognition amongst people, even people that are campaigning for Brexit in the UK, that actually the EU itself is facing existential threats, which are much broader and deeper than perhaps just Brexit. Brexit might be one example of sort of, but yellow vests is another example of the type of thing that's going on in the within the EU countries at the moment, demonstrating a general breakdown. So maybe, you know, if we wait long enough to keep this Brexit thing going for long enough, perhaps the EU will sort the problem out for us.
With a total breakdown.
Yes.
Decomposition, I think the French word was there. That,
absolutely. We can hope. Okay, let's come back to UK economic news. And, well, good news, Brian, because gross domestic product increased by 0.2% in the last quarter. That's fantastic, isn't it? Not really. Let's have a look at the details. Up 0.2% in total. Service sector up 0.4%. Production, including manufacturing, down 1.1%. Construction down 0.3%. So that's really good stuff. They're saying that growth was driven by professional scientific administration and support services. But the key point here is that this 0.2% figure is the weakest it has been since 2009. So what they're basically saying is that GDP growth has not been weaker since we came out of the worst financial crisis in living memory. Well, are we out of it then? Has got to be the question, because it seems to me that we are not. Now, just in case anybody's concerned that this is Brexit related, it's not. It's Europe wide. So France here, relatively poor performance as well. So 0.4% in their case. In Germany, they're talking about a full blown recession. So this is not just a Brexit related issue. It's much bigger than that. And the fact is, we have not dealt with the economic problems that have arisen as a result of the financial collapse. And of course, the financial system just as corrupt and dirty as it was in the run up to 2007-2008.
Yeah, and the same system controlling our MPs. And that will bring us back very nicely to actually the state of the country breakdown everywhere we look. Is this due to a sudden birth of an incompetent generation? I don't think so. I think this is planned, orchestrated stuff. Let's just have a look at this Guardian, or the Observer, it is in fact, article here from a couple of days ago. 7 weeks before we leave the EU, has anyone seen David Cameron? With Brexit weeks away, many see the former PM as the man who wrecked Britain. Cameron's memoirs will reveal more, but meanwhile we ask his friends and former colleagues, where did it all go wrong and where does he go from here? So they emphasise this bit. For some, Cameron will always be the man who wrecked his country in a clumsy attempt to save his party. At worst, a bad Brexit could break not just the economy, that's interesting in line with what you're saying, Mike, but the Union, giving Scotland new reasons to seek independence, even pushing Northern Irish voters towards unification with the South and the political party system if both Labour and the Tories are punished by voters for enabling it. So everything in the article is recognising massive breakdown. There's a little bit of soft stuff, because they're saying it's such a shame. If you look at William Hague or Clegg or Osborne, they've all got on and they've got really good jobs. What's Clegg doing? I think he's Facebook or something.
That's
in,
right,
in America.
Absolutely.
So they're all doing very well, but poor old Davy Cameron, he hasn't done so well. He's just sort of around in the background. But they are recognising in this article breakdown in the country, which could continue so that we end up with the country itself coming apart. Let's just remind ourselves that this was exactly what David Cameron said he was doing, effectively. And we have reported this statement over and over again. It's so important. But Nick Bowles, who was actually very close to David Cameron in the early days and supported a lot of his policies, his quote was that the Prime Minister, David Cameron, and his deputy, Nick Clegg, want their people power revolution to unleash chaotic effects across local communities. Chaotic, therefore, in our conservative vocabulary, is a good thing. Now, if that was just Nick Bowles saying it, you could say, well, is this true? But it was said also by a guy called Danny Kruger, who at the time was a Conservative parliamentary candidate. And he said the Conservatives plan to introduce a period of creative destruction in the public services. And that's what we've got. We talk about the knife crime. We talk about the fact that the police are themselves breaking down. They can't do their job. The NHS, schools, transport, the military, everything is breaking down. And that is because it was planned policy in order to bring in the transformation, the change agenda. And interesting, Mike, we've now got Gavin Williamson really pushing transformation with his language for the military. So we don't think it's an accident. We think this is planned policy. Those two politicians, Danny Kruger and Nick Bowles, were also saying so. It's time that the people responsible for the breakdown were brought to book. We'll leave you to have a think about that. Thanks very much for joining us. We will be back at the same time on Wednesday.
Bye-bye. Bye.